Fun presentation coming up at the Missouri History Museum. Joining us now is Tom Stockman. I got to meet you a couple of months back during one of Johnny Rabbit's presentations. You talk about movie history in St. Louis, and this time around, you're going to be doing a presentation about the history of the St. Louis drive-in movie theaters, which is something I think most people at least have experienced. Unfortunately, if you're young, there's a chance you may have never experienced something like that.
True, and we had a lot of drive-ins in St. Louis.
Yeah, how many do you think?
I'd say about 20. The first one opened here in 1940. Mm-hmm. The last one to be built here was built in 1972, and the last one to be torn down was in 2001. So mm-hmm. for about 61 years, St. Louis had about 20 drive-ins.
Wow. So the presentation is happening on June 14th, so this Thursday, and at the Missouri History Museum. What time does it start?
Starts at 7 o'clock.
Perfect.
Free.
Awesome. You know, people, every time I've been to anything at the History Museum, it's been wonderful and really insightful. I always enjoy the things I learned from it. What were the early movies like when it came to the drive-in? Were they all those horror movies?
Well, there were a lot of movies that only played at drive-ins, a lot of schlocky, low-budget horror movies, but I love that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I was born in 61, so I didn't. That was kind of about the heyday of the drive-in. There was about 4,100 drive-ins across the country when I was born.
Yeah.
By the time I got my driver's license, you know, in the late 70s, and I started going to the drive-in all the time, there were fewer and fewer, and they were getting kind of run down. So what I saw was kind of the twilight of the drive-in, mm-hmm. you know, the final days of the drive-in. I sort of saw the drive-ins all close.
Yeah.
But I love those Dusk to Dawn horror shows. Those are great.
Yeah. Those type of marathon shows. And, you know, when the weather is just right, there's nothing better, you know?
When
you can sit in your car, window down. So did you ever have to sneak people in your trunk to get into those, or was that before your time? Because
I think I was the one in the trunk.
You're like, don't say anything. We're almost there. And the popcorn and all of the different treats. The last time I was at a drive-in would have been about 10 years ago when I was still living in Ohio at the time. Mm-hmm. And we drove up there, and it was a kind of, you know, it was a little bit disappointing in the sense there weren't as many people patronizing the place, but the tradition was still alive. People were still going to it. You're saying that right now the closest one to St. Louis is over on the Illinois side, and it's still heavily attended.
The Skyview, it's right in the middle of downtown Belleville. And they on Friday and Saturday night, they really pack them in. And it's a really nice drive-in. It's clean and very well maintained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are some of the things that appeal to you for drive-in movie theaters?
Well, like I say, in the late 70s, I would just go to several of the drive-ins had triple features. There was a drive-in over on Page called The Holiday,
mm-hmm.
and they would have they had four screens there.
Hmm.
And each screen would have three movies every night, seven nights a week. All four screens would have triple features. And this was back in the late 70s, and my friends and I all had restaurant jobs. So we'd get off work at 10 or 11, and we'd just meet over at the Holiday Drive-In. And I always kept a lawn chair in my trunk,
mm-hmm.
and I would just kind of drag it over to whichever screen was showing the best movie at the time. And we had a great time.
Yeah. You know, I think if I remember this, and maybe my memory's a little cloudy, but when it came to the regulations with drive-ins, they had to wait a certain amount of time after the movie was out before they can start showing it on the screens based on the way, like, the movie industry worked?
Yeah, it may have been that way in the past. Yeah. It's really not that way anymore. The Belleville's going to show a first-run film. I'm not sure what's showing there now,
yeah.
but it wouldn't be surprising me if it's, you know, Ocean's 8 or whatever opened this past weekend.
Yeah. Tom Stockman, editor of the website We Are Movie Geeks. What would be the ultimate movie if you can pick one to go watch at a drive-in?
I would have to say my favorite drive-in experience, which I'd love to recreate tonight. This was before I could drive when I was about 13. Our friend's dad took us to see The Rats Are Coming, The Werewolves Are Here. And I'll never forget that because it was the first time I can remember a movie being bad. You know how when you're a kid, especially in the 70s, every movie's really great.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the first time I remember this movie's horrible. But I still had a great time, and I sort of embraced that movie. I actually had the poster for that movie hanging framed in my den because I loved that movie so much because I saw it at the drive-in when I was 13. And there's several experiences like that where I've just become sort of fixated on certain movies I saw at the drive-in back in my teens.
Yeah. Why do you think drive-ins lost their popularity over the years?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of it had to do with real estate values. When drive-ins, especially drive-ins in St. Louis County, like the first drive-in, for example, was in De Pere, right at Ballast, Manchester, where the West County Mall currently sits. When that was built in 1940, De Pere was kind of out in the boonies. That was far West County.
Mm-hmm.
But as the city and the county expanded and the county expanded west, those property values became more and more valuable. And it was just a lot, it made a lot more sense in terms of, you know, tax revenue, et cetera, to build a mall instead of a drive-in movie theater that's only going to be open, you know, at night. It's only going to be open certain months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big part of it.
Yeah. When you start putting something like this together, you start to learn about the history of the drive-ins through the area. It's a little, every time you drive by an old drive-in movie site, do you just take a moment to reflect on what that site used to be?
Well, I certainly do. I get really sad. And that one drive-in that I mentioned, the Holiday, which was my favorite, I went to that drive-in more times than probably all the other drive-ins combined. I can't even bring myself to drive down that stretch of page because I get so bummed out because all the crazy and wild and stupid things that happened to me at that drive-in back in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The glory days. Tom Stockman, editor of the website We Are Movie Geeks, and at the History Museum coming up on Thursday, the history of the St. Louis drive-in movie theaters. Another big one there. So for your sake, you say you open at 7 o'clock. What time did the doors open for that one?
I believe 6:30.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. Either 6 or 6:30.
Yeah, it's a little bit early.
We've also got some live music. There's a local singer-songwriter named Kevin Rennick. Kevin's sort of best known for his song Up in the Air, which played during the closing credits of that George Clooney movie Up in the Air that was filmed here in St. Louis.
Hmm.
Kevin's an old friend of mine, and I contacted him a couple months ago, and I said, have you ever written a song about the drive-in movies? I just sort of asked him that out of the blue, and he said, yeah, I wrote this song called Twilight of the Drive-Ins about the old drive-ins in St. Louis and how about how they're all gone now and how we miss them. So Kevin's actually going to sing that song in the middle of my presentation. He's going to sing a second song as well about nostalgia and lost St. Louis.
Oh, that's awesome. That's neat. Yeah, that's the one presentation that I met you at was talking about some of the historic movie sites that were recorded here in St. Louis, and Up in the Air being one of them, and some of the different locations, movie filming sites in the air, which is pretty neat. I learned a lot from that one. The funny part is whenever I have friends or family come into town, I feel like I have a little bit of inside information. I can just sprinkle those type of things in there and impress them,
sure,
which is good about these presentations. So it's this Thursday, the history of the St. Louis drive-in movie theaters at the History Museum. Tom Stockman, get there. You know, parking, they have some on site. Johnny Rabbit always says park on Lindell and just walk into the History Museum. It makes it really easy to get in there, and you'll have a great time. I'm so glad you came in to talk about what's happening this week.
Oh, sure. Hey, thanks for having me on.
He joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line, and more this hour. I wanted to talk a little bit about this video of an Oakland jogger that has gone viral, because do you think it's right for you to toss a homeless person's possession because it's out in public? It's a weird argument because it's splitting a lot of different people on the internet. Some people see this guy as a hero and other people see him as a villain. And I also want to talk about the pregnant man. This is so stupid. Oh, lots to get to here on Overnight America, KMOX. Thank you yet again for choosing to join us here through the late night hours. You know, it's 12:19 in St. Louis, and we're up late with you. We're doing our thing together. I came across this story, and apparently I thought it was... I didn't think it would be controversial, but it kind of is. So there is a video that shows an Oakland jogger tossing a homeless man's clothes blankets into the water. He is in a community where homelessness is starting to be more visual. So they're starting to see more. And Oakland, just like St. Louis and many other places, has their own issue. I think there's really very few places in America that have no homeless problem. But how do you deal with it is the question. How do you appropriately deal with it? If someone is leaving you alone, not bothering you, do you feel like it is your duty to go in, either harass the guy, like, hey, get out of here? Or do you think that maybe it's inappropriate the way some people are handling it? In this case, the jogger went up to the homeless man's possessions, or I guess that's what you can call them. It was just really, you know, to be honest, it did look like a bunch of trash, but you can tell it was a homeless man's collection of clothes and blankets and stuff like that. And he was picking it up and throwing it into the lake and picking it up, throwing it into trash cans. He says, I'm just picking up the trash. He was tired of homeless people in underpasses. And we're not talking about even in walkways. The person's way off the main walk area. It's not on the sidewalk. This person's like, you know, probably 20 or 30 yards away from a sidewalk, just trying to mind his own business. Now, the person wasn't there at the time, but other people in the area noticed what he was doing and confronted him about it and said, that is not right. And I'm going to play the audio here for you with this one person. I kind of edited it because there was some swear words and things, but the man's whole argument is, I'm just picking up the trash. Do you think this jogger was right to try to clean up the area? Because it's a public park, it's a public area. Or should he have just left it alone? 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. So the audio you're going to hear is someone recording this jogger, not wearing a shirt or anything. You know he's out jogging. He's got the earphones on and stuff. Just tossing his trash. Apparently he's fed up with the homeless problem in his area.
Hey, what are you doing with this stuff, bro? What are you doing with this stuff, man?
I'm not taking any of it. He can pick it up.
You just threw it in the lake.
No, that was an accident.
Oh, it was not. I saw you drag and throw it in.
So this man is at Lake Merritt at...
Get up the trash.
It's not.
Going to the trash.
It's
Jaru's
stuff. Leave it.
So he says, I'm just picking up the trash. He's like, no, leave it. Once the jogger realized other people were watching, he stopped tossing things in the water. Number one, if you were tossing even trash in the water and you realized your mistake after people were watching you and you stopped it, that's a pretty good indication you know what you're doing is wrong, right? In the back of his mind. But once he was gaining some crowds, and people were like, hey, cut it out. That's when he started throwing away in the trash can.
That's an issue.
He's taking a homeless man's stuff and he's throwing it in the lake. That's our beautiful lake with stuff in it now.
Get him picking up trash. What do you want me to do? Look at this.
I'm picking up trash. What do you want me to do? 314-436-7900, 800-925. 1120. The person recording this is J.J. Harris. He said, the audacity, the lack of compassion for another human being, the greater context of where we are as a society.
It was going everywhere. It was already way over here. Look at this.
So the incident took place in a neighborhood where they're a little bit upset with the amount of homeless people starting to move into it. They think it's an eyesore. When I hear this video, based on what I see here in St. Louis, when I go through any different parks, I understand when you're walking to a ball game or you're walking to a Blues game or you're going through one of the parks, the last thing you want to do is be with your family and see a bunch of stray blankets and clothes and bottles and bags laying in the middle of the park. Because you wonder to yourself, okay, what if this person may be somewhat, you know, confrontational. You want to avoid that conflict. I think there's a difference between that and then people just minding their own business. I guess a homeless person, does he have any recourse to expect that leaving a bunch of garbage around when he's not there, if he expects people just to leave it alone or if he just risks people coming in out of frustration and moving the things? So the person said, I feel the frustration of both sides. Now I will say clearly that was not appropriate. Some people thinking about that. The mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaff. It's not appropriate to take someone's belongings. It's not appropriate to trash our beautiful Lake Merritt. So looking at it from the mayor's standpoint, they should have just left the homeless person alone. The part that I have a hard time with is that when I'm driving in downtown St. Louis at night, there's some pretty aggressive homeless people that are panhandling, asking for money. They're walking into the middle of the street. They're asking for cash. You don't want that. There's a clear difference between people that are just, you know, sitting in the park that don't have a place to go because they're not welcome into a homeless shelter, and the government's fighting Larry Rice, who won't allow them to open up a homeless shelter and take people off the street and try to rehabilitate them. There's a difference between the people that leave you alone and the people that don't. I think you want to make sure you stop the aggressive nature of some of the panhandling and the problems that we have with homelessness, where, you know, they're coming up to you and they're asking for whatever. And if someone is just in a park, let them be, man. You know, if they're not hurting anyone, let them be. And it is the government's obligation to help these people. It's their obligation. And if you have a problem with the way the government's handling it, what you shouldn't be doing is going tossing blankets in the water. You should be going to your elected officials. You should be going to your mayor and saying, what are you going to do about this? This is their problem to fix. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. I want to get to Daniel in St. Louis. Daniel, what's going on?
Well, you know, it's sort of a dilemma. Mm-hmm. And like you just mentioned earlier in your comment, you know, what I discovered after 21 years of doing volunteer work with a homeless outreach organization, New Life Financial Assistance.
Right.
You know, after 8 o'clock at night, what I discovered is basically the people who either, A, refuse or have been banned from any type of residential intake type service, 501c3 organization, mm-hmm. that are out there on the street, they do have issues and problems. A lot of them are mental illness, alcohol, or drugs. They cannot or will not or refuse to go and receive any type of assistance.
Right.
And my understanding is the United States Supreme Court, based on a New York City case, like you said, basically says, you know, let them be. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sad. It's an individual choice. But unless they're committing a crime, trespassing, urinating in public, or doing something, you know, that's kind of where the city got overtly aggressive, mm-hmm. and tried to transfer all the private entities, volunteers, 501c3s, and other organizations, to include individuals who have reached out, like myself and thousands of others, to try to help these people, you know, find a place, mm-hmm. find shelter, get out of the cold, be out of harm's way. It's a very, very difficult challenge.
Yeah. Daniel, I've talked to Larry Rice in the past, and he even goes through with a van and talks to people on the street and see if they need any help, the ones that can't get into shelters. I know he's actively giving out bus passes, so if there is someone that's in need of a doctor's appointment or need to get somewhere else or whatever it is, that they have an opportunity to do that if they have no money. I know he's actively handing out like bags of whatever, toiletries and things to people on the street, and he recognizes some of these people because he sees them all the time. I mean, there's people actively trying to help the community. Did you volunteer for the New Life Evangelistic Center?
Yeah, I actually started. I went to my first volunteer meeting. I was driving a St. Louis County cab. Mm-hmm. As an independent contractor, and I leased the vehicle, and I started going there in the fall of 1997.
Okay.
And my concern was, because we hear it reoccurring in the news, we literally had homeless people on the street freezing to death. So I started in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And we would go out with a group of other people. You know, sometimes it would be private individuals, or, you know, just people concerned about other people, humanity. There'd be church groups. There would be even corporate organizations. We would organize and go out on a systematic locate and find when it was severely cold, and I'm talking below freezing. Mm-hmm. We would go out and look for these people, and we would encourage them to go into shelters. Mm-hmm. And that's how I began. And as the more I did it, I was like, wow, I like a lot of people. It's not the first thought on most people's minds to see or have an event or cross paths with a homeless person. Mm-hmm. And each one is an individual life. They're different. You got to take each person one at a time. I respected Reverend Larry Rice because I know he's been dedicated to that, and, you know, other organizations as well. But one by one, you know, for some reason, it's like they're trying to shut these places down.
Yeah.
Even I've had two different police officers in the city of St. Daniel who know me. Where do we take these people now? Because mm-hmm. we're not talking about the troublemakers. We're not talking about, you know, the criminal element who refused to do anything or cooperate.
Right.
That's a dead-end street for them. So we try to help the ones who don't want to be out there, people who have actually been attacked, homeless people just trying to sleep.
Yep.
And now it's like they're being herded because, remember, the police are a reactionary force. They're going to deal with the trespassing complaint issues.
Right. Exactly, and, yeah.
You know, there's we got to work toward percentage solvable solutions of proactive people who care, commit their own personal or private resources to helping do the outreach. But by eliminating organization after organization, and there's several, not just New Life Evangelistic Center, we're going to see this problem continue to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And that transforms into car breaking, you know, the car break-ins. And there is a cause and effect relationship. So anybody who's interested, you know, be proactive. Like you said, you got to get involved because apathy is our worst enemy. And I think, you know, I thank God for the people who do try, take their time and care enough or have the ability to help and reach out to these others.
Very good, Daniel. I'm glad you shared your thoughts on that. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. What do you think? Homeless issue. We have it here. We have it there. Everywhere has it. And do you just let it be? Do you find that it's easiest to, hey, if they're not bothering anyone? I feel like one of the great universal human feelings is we just don't want to be bothered by other people. We don't want to be hassled. We don't want to be bothered by other people. And for the most part, sometimes you just let it be. It's Overnight America, KMOX. That's not an easy situation. I mean, do you think the jogger was right to try to clean up this area? It's a public park and all. Maybe trying to deter homelessness to a certain area, but really, what would you have done, I guess, if you were in a situation where you see someone picking up a homeless person's pile of stuff and tossing it into either a lake, a river, or a trash can? 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Clavin texted in and said, I would have pushed him into the lake. Lucky I'm not out there. Clavin would have stepped in. Let's get to Tom in Ohio. Tom, what's going on?
Hey, first of all, Ryan, thank you. And thank you also to Ben for your coverage yesterday. Not only the extended hour, but I know there's got to be a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on for both of you on a night like last night when you don't know what's coming up and when it's coming up.
Yeah, last night was a crazy fun night, but I'll tell you, for people that love radio and like the radio people in the industry, I love breaking news nights. Like, to me, that was fun.
As far as the homeless situation is concerned, like I mentioned to Ben, anytime I hear something like that, it reminds me, and I may sound like a broken record, but it reminds me, we need to cut back on immigration, both legal and illegal, and start spending those dollars, those resource dollars, on the people that are already here.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's for mental health, whether it's for training the people that have success and have a fairly good living and so forth, not to, you know, disrupt the life of somebody who is homeless, mm-hmm. but rather try to help them improve their life. I think we need to spend those dollars rather than on bilingual education and trilingual education and so forth on maybe helping to resolve some emotional problems that people might have or, the way they look at things in life or finding out why they're slow. They're not getting the information they need to get a quality education so that they can qualify for a decent job. I mean, there are a lot of things that come into play here. You know, even just housing and food and so forth. Keep in mind that every time you have an additional body, and especially when you're talking about people who come to this country and have kids, and especially they jump to the front of the line.
Well, I don't. Would you think you'd just be reallocating the money at some point? So let's say hypothetically, you can't magically deport everyone all at once. So let's say you cut all the resources away from the people that are here illegally. If they end up on the street, you're going to be spending the money anyway, right?
All I'm saying is this. Number one, first of all, I know there's there's talk at least that both sides are trying to work out an agreement on immigration and legalizing some of the illegals that are here and so forth. And I really think it's a mistake to do that. But going beyond that is, I really think what they're going to end up with is a political result rather than a result that actually helps to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's the result that will get both sides more votes.
Okay.
And it just seems to me that, you know, I think people need to step back and say, hey, you know, let's take those dollars and you know, cut back on legal immigration even, and take those dollars and focus on people. Because just like the last caller was saying, you know, you don't have enough people focusing on this. You don't have enough dollars to focus on this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you eliminate some of the other problems that we're making for ourselves that would otherwise not be there, I mean, even a whole idea of sanctuary cities and so forth, and get rid of those problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't need, I mean, in other words, those aren't our problems, you know. In other words, we're taking something on in addition to the problems we already have. It's sort of like if in your family, you know, you have problems in your own family, and at the same time, if you're out there creating problems for yourself, then that just puts more on your plate, and you're sacrificing your own family.
Yeah.
That's the way I have to look at it.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks, Tom. Good to hear from you.
All right, take care.
I guess when it comes to sanctuary cities, if we were to just say, okay, if you want to live by this policy, then you lose your federal grants and the money because, hey, if you don't want to comply with federal laws, then if you want to do it your way, then fine. You don't have to do it the Fed's way. You don't get the Fed's money. That would be the enough incentive for some of these cities to wake up real quick to realize they can't tackle this sort of thing alone. They want to bring it on alone, but they couldn't tackle it alone. So let me get to Mike here in St. Louis. Hey, Mike, what's going on?
How you doing? I heard you talk about the homeless and stuff.
Right.
Number one, I think people need to be more compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of homeless people. They're not all bad. And even the Bible, I believe it's Psalms 41, the Lord has blessed you, he says, consider poor for even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you ought to, now, sometimes, like, maybe they're cleaned up or staying, and maybe they want to look for a job. I would give them, even if they got food, but sometimes that food might be old, I would give them, like Larry Rice gives them bus fare, I would give them money because some of them don't always misuse it. In case they're out looking for a job or something, and maybe they want to stop up a nice place to eat, I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we got enough of money where we can share our own pocket. We need to be more compassionate. And think about it like this, like you got law. All right, I think God's laws are better.
Mm-hmm.
And a long time at a garage sale, I found a book, and I was telling about the laws, like you got your lawyers and the judges down here.
Mm-hmm.
But it said God's law is higher than all the laws down here, but the world doesn't act like that.
Right, you're right. But with this person, you're right. He should have showed a lot more compassion. I know that some people get frustrated over this, and they think it could be a safety issue or sanitary issue, whatever it may be. There's a lot better ways to handle this sort of thing, and unfortunately, the cities aren't tackling it. So he felt like it was the only thing he could do in order to try to stop it, I guess. But you're right. There is no compassion in that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that some of the lack of passion. Now, put ourselves in their position. How would we feel? So you can't just think everybody's out to get you. And even if somebody was out to get you. What the Bible say, love your enemies and pray for them and curse not and do good for them to despitely use you.
Mm-hmm.
Self-love. And I need the laws. I didn't agree with it, one gentleman. I think it's okay to legalize legal immigration. And I'll say this real quick. Here's why I think what they're making a mistake. If years ago, if they would do this, like this, if they would have had you could buy products in USA
mm-hmm.
made, and the foreign goods in the stores, wherever you go, right there equally and give the customers a choice, we wouldn't have to be worried about no walls and all that. And I think it would have been fairer for everybody and it could have been better. But they do it different and backwards, in my opinion.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. We've had, it's also complicated when it comes to the goods and services and the products, less the services, more the products. People do have the chance of buying anything that's made in America. Normally, it's very easily labeled. People are pretty proud if it's made here and they put, you know, an American flag, made in America, something like that, right on the packaging. I don't think that would have played much of a factor when it comes to immigration. mostly because just look at how terrible NAFTA was. The idea of NAFTA and how that was supposed to help jobs and it never did. There's so much bigger influences on what would help and what would hurt immigration in the country. I think that when it comes to legal immigration, we've gone so long with illegal immigration that we've really screwed up both sides when it comes to legal and legal, that it has to be reevaluated and we have to figure out what we're doing. We need to know who's coming into our country, all of these things. But that just plays a part. I don't think it has too much to on the homeless side, but there was something else I wanted to tackle here. I'm not one to talk about fashion all that much, but fashion is so stupid. There's apparently, during Fashion Week, pregnant men. This is so stupid. I got to talk about this coming up on Overnight America KMOX. I wouldn't consider myself a fashion guru or a trendsetter by any means, but I got a good laugh out of this one. There's a Chinese designer, Xander Zhu, I think that's how you say his name, that was showing off some men's fashion in London. And this is so... I can't even say this without laughing. So Chinese designer Xander Zhu's collection features a male model wearing a fake pregnancy belly, jeans, T-shirt, something on the shirt that reads New World Baby. You know, back in my day, they just called that a beer gut. But apparently, these fashion models are plopping on, as part of a statement, these fake pregnancy type of, I don't know if they'd be waistbands or just over the stomach. Hey, most guys listening here have a built-in spare tire. They don't have to do anything artificial here. The way I can tell when I'm looking at the one model, it's just so weird. It looks like in the old WWE days, if you wear a championship belt, except it's like flesh colored and it looks like a stomach and it kind of like just sits there like over your stomach to make it look like you're pregnant. It's almost like a belt. I don't know what it looks like on the back end. And the person's wearing these pants. The only way I can describe these shorts is what my grandma used to try to make for me when she tried to make clothes. There was a point when I was going to school, you had to have the official type of uniform at the school. My grandma said, I can make that. So she attempted to make the school uniform, and I wore it to school one day. I was probably in first grade, and the teachers said, the quality wasn't there. Grandma, she tried her hardest. She really, really tried, and more power to her because she thought she could do it. However, it just wasn't the same, and that's what it looks like, these pants. It looks like my grandma tried to make the school shorts that were allowed at the school I went to, the Catholic school. And this is what the designer said on Instagram. We prepare to welcome a future of male pregnancy. Oh, boy. Okay, we prepared to welcome a future of male pregnancy. So the summer-spring 2019 collection, unsurprisingly entitled Supernatural, Extraterrestrial, and Company. Extraterrestrial, indeed. Very alien to me, this whole idea. I think that we've gotten to the point in the fashion world, or really any world in society, where we try to deceive ourselves into thinking that biological males can get pregnant. It's not a thing. You understand? Biological males can't get pregnant, period. It's basically what's happening is it's a woman getting pregnant that identifies as a male. So it's not a male pregnancy. It's a female pregnancy if you're actually pregnant. Or you can put on this fake belly and pretend all you like, I guess. But the highly anticipated show by quote-unquote man, a kind of fashion incubator, which has helped many of the current generation of British designers, male models wearing evening dresses, miniskirts, and opting to go bare-chested, are featured heavily in this sort of thing. I just don't understand fashion. This is... I got a good laugh out of that. One other story that came out. And I was kind of surprised by this. And I think it's something that a lot of high schools are going to have to address when it comes to transgender rules at sports. So they had a recent state open track meet in Connecticut, and competing in the meter runs, the 100 meter runs, the 200 meter runs, it was for high school girls. However, a couple of the people competing were biological boys. And you want to guess what happened in both of these meter dashes, the 100 and 200 meter dashes? Well, the boys won. So as they were allowed to compete as girls in the state competition, they blew out the competition. It wasn't even fair. I think that there are huge physical, biological type of traits that men have that put them at a huge advantage when it comes to sports, running, and things like that. So when you have them on the same competition, there's a clear advantage that the boys will have. So part of this is that the schools have to figure out how they're going to handle this in the future. It's not just something that Connecticut's dealing with. Hill House coach Gary Moore told media out there that Miller should be able to compete, but the situation wasn't fair to the girls, adding something should be done to level the playing field. He said, quote, "I've been stopped by at least five coaches, all of them saying they really liked what I said in the paper. How come other coaches aren't talking?" Well, I think they're afraid, because when you speak out against a controversial topic like this, you're bound to upset some people, and they don't want to be out there on record upsetting people. I think it's part of them not knowing where they stand, or if they do stand on it and they refuse to take a stand on how they believe on these things, then ultimately they're being permissive of things that they don't believe in. And if you really want to find a solution for this, maybe you should be part of it. Maybe you should be part of the discussion and say that there has to be something to level the playing field if this is the route you're going to be forcing these kids to go down. He continued, "This is a big issue a lot of coaches have, and we've got to do something, but how come you're not saying anything? I've said what I needed to say. I'm getting a little annoyed with the coaches that we haven't been able to get together and do what's best for everybody." Of course, the girls that competed in this, they do feel bad for them, and a lot of the girls do feel it's unfair, mostly because they're being pinned up against boys in competitions where they have clear advantages. This is going to continue. I mean, when political correctness gets in and they allow this sort of thing, if the different agencies or the organizations the inside the state want to change their rules to make sure this is open to them, that's their prerogative if they want to change the rules for it. You need to be showing your displeasure to the people that are changing the rules to allow this, mostly because as you as a competitor, you're playing by those rules. You're agreeing to play by those rules. So all you got to do is either petition or try to find something better. That's what you need to do, period. So same thing that happens with the Olympics. If the Olympic board wants to handle it this way, that's their rules. You're competing with their rules. That's why you need to voice your opinion on this. Don't hide. Coming up, another hour of Overnight America and a little Tell Me Something Good. Is there something good that's happened to you? I would love to hear it. Coming up next.